Welcome to the Mama Needs a Moment podcast. We are your hosts, Chrissy
and Cindy,
co-founders of Her Health Collective.
We are two moms obsessed with changing the way moms take care of themselves. We're so glad you're here. Let's dive in.
Her Health Collective hosts four roundtables each year in an effort to bring together our experts and dive deep into the topics that matter to moms the most. We have found that these roundtables are often our most well-liked episodes. Each of the experts represented in our roundtables have different professional backgrounds and specialties. When they come together and discuss women's health, you can expect to get different perspectives based on their area of focus. This is also a time for the experts to collaborate with professionals from other industries in order to create a more holistic model of care for moms. Our goal is to expand not only the experts' referral network, but to emphasize the importance of collaborative healthcare. In our roundtable today, we are discussing how to handle toxic family members and strategies for healthy conflict resolution. And I know this is going to be a popular topic because this comes up all the time within our Her Circle mom community. Today, we are honored to be joined by several of our HER experts. We're going to take a few moments to let each of our experts introduce themselves and share their area of expertise so that our listeners can hear each expert's voice and have a better idea of who is speaking during the upcoming conversation. So in no particular order, I'm going to just call out a name. And if you could just pop on and just introduce yourself and tell us what is your area of focus. We'll go ahead and start with Natasha.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Natasha Harvey. I am a massage therapist. I have been practicing for 20 years now. I have worked in areas from being a spa operations manager, lead therapist trainer, a coordinator for a massage program, as well as owning my own business now. And I'm located here in Wake Forest, North Carolina, and it's a pleasure to be here.
So happy to have you, Natasha. Sarah.
Hi, my name is Sarah Szymanowski. I'm a licensed clinical mental health counselor associate, which means I'm a therapist and I focus on the perinatal spectrum and beyond because never really ends once you become a parent. I really like to support parents as they're developing their identities in parenthood, coping with the personal challenges that come up along with the societal challenges that come up, you know, like sick days. How do you handle them when you're about to be on a podcast? That's
absolutely
a great example. And my business is called Fermata Counseling. It's a nod to my 10 years practicing as a music therapist, the name.
Thank you, Sarah. We're really excited to have you here. And I'm also really excited that I got to hear you pronounce your last name because up to this point, I've only seen it written. And that is not at all how I pronounced it in my head.
It's 11 letters and really showed my commitment to my spouse when I took it on.
My maiden name is Polish, so I thought I had a pretty good handle on it. And but I should have known better. Melanie.
Hi, Melanie from Root Guys Wellness, your gut guru. Really happy to be here. I am an herbalist and a health coach focusing highly on digestive health. Gut health equals whole health. And I focus heavily in helping women and really empowering women with digestive issues to heal themselves physically, spiritually, and emotionally. It's really whole body work that I do. A lot of mind body work, a lot of emotional work. Tapping into the vagus nerve, tapping into different modalities that help people to really understand their body's needs and to really get people out of their own way so that they can heal. And I also teach classes, herbalism and health classes for kids and adults.
Thank you, Melanie. I know you're going to have some awesome insights for us today on this topic. Last but certainly not least, Erin.
Hi, Erin Bowdy. And I have an interesting collection of skills to contribute. I am a behaviorist by trade. I've been working in leadership behavior for about 2 decades. And that has turned into me as a behavior and business strategist for female small entrepreneurs, small business owners. But in that work, I have become an expert at trauma-informed therapy with a 9-year-old on the spectrum and a 7-year-old with ADHD and depression. So, you know, all of that trauma-informed work has changed the way I do leadership development. and really taken a personal approach to it. So for about the last 13 years, I've used a personality model in my work to help with the identity things that we navigate, the habits and behavior change that we navigate. And I'm a PhD candidate in organizational psychology. So I take all of that work together on top of being trained in somatic experiencing with the nervous system work. So it's really fun. I get to take all of my roles and my hats and help women in business thrive. And I love it. Many of them are moms. So that too is a big job. So yeah, I'm here to provide from lots of perspectives.
Thank you, Erin. I know you're going to have some awesome insights too. Really excited for today's conversation.
Her Health Collective has created a community called Her Circle, and that's the supportive community for moms. And in this community, we have lots of events and moms share about struggles dealing with a toxic family member. So it keeps the conversation going in these events. In all seriousness, though, it is something that we hear a lot about. And it's also something we've noticed being mentioned on social media more frequently. So there's so much that can sometimes feel difficult to identify exactly what is meant when we say a person is toxic. What makes a person toxic? Are there certain signs, characteristics we should be looking out for? We'd love to hear from all of you answers to these questions. And if we could, I'd like to start with Natasha. Natasha, you had some really great pointers for us before jumping on, and we'd love for you to share with our listeners.
Certainly, I would be happy to. As you mentioned, there are toxic triggers and patterns to recognize, and some of them, of the characteristics, as I listed, they are manipulating. And I wanted to say, I would encourage you ladies to take notes. You may recognize some of these signs, and some you may not have heard, and it's just something to look out for. But they blame others for things, especially those things that they do not want to recognize in themselves. They take no responsibility for their own actions. They may have no care or concern for others' feelings, thoughts, or needs. They are critical, judgmental, and sometimes cruel. I was going to say downright cruel. I've experienced that as well. They make you feel guilty for things that you didn't do. They lie, cheat to get their own way. So those are just a few of the things that you can look for in toxic people.
That was wonderful to get us started. And just for clarification, for a person to be considered toxic, they don't have to have all of those characteristics, do they?
No.
It's correct. Piecemealing altogether. Okay.
These are just some triggers to look for. They could possess more than one, but even just one of them is a sign that they have that toxic characteristic, that personality trait to look out for. Absolutely.
I'm just very interested from my own perspective. When you are working on someone doing your body work, do you see this show up in a specific area of the body muscularly? I know that's a very random question.
I have not seen these characteristics pop up in manipulating, but even in just conversation, I have, and actually, interestingly enough, I have a customer now that I'm actually battling with the decision of whether or not I want to just say, you know what, I don't think this is a good fit for us, because the comments she makes, it's to the point now, it's like, you know what, it's not comfortable for me. I don't look forward to seeing her, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And so I'm at that situation now with one of my customers, and that was another point I was going to make. It doesn't even have to be a family member. It could be someone within the workplace. It could be a long time. It could be a best friend. Anybody that you have any type of relationship with could potentially be a toxic relationship. And right now, that's what the workplace is, what I'm experiencing right now. I experience it in other workplaces, but now as my own boss, I'm having to address it from another area. But
absolutely.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And we'd love to hear from any of the other experts that are currently on the line that would like to weigh in on various different things to look out for a person who may be toxic.
I love sort of pulling it back a little bit, right? When we think about toxicity and people's behaviors, I think it's helpful to sort of remember two things. One, we weren't born this way. So anybody that we come into contact with in life, is created, right? The behaviors are created, even if they're harmful. And so you have to sort of hold what makes someone behave the way that they are. And it sort of adds like a humanization back into what might be going on. And then the second thing is often harmful behavior is impactful to our own nervous system. And so while we might not be able to manage or control, especially if it's a family member or somebody of close relationship, maybe we are required to see them at holidays or things like that, right? Maybe we can't cut them out of our lives and have those sort of strong separation, that it becomes a nervous system regulation tool to say, how do I protect and create a felt sense of safety internally to be able to hold space with somebody who might be harmful. And there's varying degrees of harm, right? There absolutely extreme sort of oppressive or violence or harm is a traumatic experience. But there's also when our nervous system and our bodies aren't practiced at dealing with things like conflict, it can feel harmful. Creating that felt sense of safety within my nervous system and holding someone's humanity helps us hold space when we can't necessarily control the relationship.
Natasha, pretty much you defined my father. I mean, every single word you said on that list was my father. And, you know, he hasn't had an easy upbringing. And just what, you know, Aaron was saying, like, I understand. But at the same time, how do you not become reactive? And I can tell you what's really helping me is using principles of nonviolent communication, otherwise called compassionate communication. And I don't know, Erin's nodding her head. I'm not sure like how many people are familiar with that, but it's really life-changing. And it's really all about communicating from a perspective of non-judgment and also validate, this is the hardest thing for me, validating the other person's feelings first so that they feel heard. And then coming from a perspective of I and unmet needs. So like we all have unmet needs, right? And so it's coming from this perspective of this is, you know, my unmet need. This is my request based on my unmet need. Can you do this? And it can span from all different types of arguments or toxicity and conversations. And a really helpful book that I'm reading, and it's really an easy read. I love reading it before bed. It has exercises for every day. So you like wake up, you read it. And it's called Peaceful Living Daily Meditations for Living with Love, Healing, and Compassion by Mary McKenzie. It's just beautiful, like tidbits of tools to use. And it's really, really supporting me in dealing with this because you're going to run into people that are like this. And especially with not being able to express their emotions and not be in touch with their emotions. And we all know we can't change other people, right? So we can only change the way we are. This topic is so relevant to my life based on what's happening with my relationship with my dad. And yeah, I'm just grateful to be here and hear everybody's wisdom for it.
Melanie, out of curiosity, you also do a lot of work with people with their bodies, helping them to feel more balanced. And I wanted to direct the same question that I had asked Natasha. I'm assuming that having these toxic people in your lives creates stress, and therefore stress creates various different responses in the body. Can you tell us a little bit about what you see?
Yeah, absolutely. So my dad has a lot of liver issues, and liver is associated. So all our organs are associated with emotions, and liver is associated with anger. And so it doesn't surprise me. Now I become heated when I'm around him. Reflux is a heat condition. So I'll get reflux when I'm around him. Is that really about what I'm eating, or is that really about my body reacting? And our digestive systems, our guts are coated. That's our enteric nervous system down there. And that's coated with nerve cells. So, you know, our gut is our second brain and we feel so much there. And I've also just noticed in general, we're a stressed out society and a lot of people have lower back pain, right?
Yes.
And Louise Hay has a wonderful little book. It's about the body and what you feel, and then an affirmation for each part of the body. I can't remember exactly, but I know Louise Hay is the author, and that's super helpful. And I definitely see a lot of that in people. Vertigo, Somebody just texted me about experiencing vertigo. That's an extreme hyperreactive. And actually, Aaron was touching on this, like the polyvagal theory. And this person just gets that fight and fight or flight. And then when you get like vertigo and you're just totally out of it, you know, you're getting into freeze mode. And so that's nervous system dysregulation. And definitely being in a toxic relationship or being around somebody can cause any of these things for sure.
To our Patreon supporters, thank you. We appreciate you so much. Our goal has always been for moms to know they're not alone in the tough and challenging phases of motherhood. We know Mama Needs a Moment provides this to our listeners.
We are thrilled with the growth of the podcast over the past 2 years. Last year, Spotify shared that Mama Needs a Moment was in the top 30% most followed podcasts, was heard in 9 countries, and had more content than 97% of other creators in the family category.
We have recently launched a Patreon account for Mama Needs a Moment. This is a great way for you to provide additional support to Her Health Collective.
We've set up 3 options for Patreon supporters, each with its very own perks, such as special events, discounts, and bonus content from each and every podcast guest that is available only to our Patreon supporters.
Will you become a Patreon supporter? It would mean the world to us.
Just going off of these experiences and looking back at what makes someone toxic, I just wanted to add that these are all signs. You don't have to check off a list of like someone's manipulative or someone's gaslighting me. Or if you just have that feeling, if you have that reaction, that's worth listening to as well. If they're not checking boxes otherwise, but something is not sitting right with you, that's a feeling worth listening to. And that can help define what is toxic or what is toxic to me.
Thank you so much for that, Sarah, and everybody. That was a wonderful conversation introducing us to this concept of toxic relationships and toxic people, because it is a term we hear often, and it's kind of hard to put your finger on what exactly is meant by that sometimes. I'd like to shift us over to discussing boundaries. Boundaries is something that comes up in conversations with her moms all of the time. We all know that we need to set boundaries. We need more boundaries. We need to be stricter with the boundaries we have set. We need boundaries for our own health and sanity. We need boundaries for the sake of our family. We know we need them. Like there's a whole host of reasons that we need boundaries, but setting boundaries can feel really murky. It's not an exact science. Maybe it is, but I haven't learned the scientific method for it as of yet. Maybe you can help with that, but it feels very murky. So how do we do it? When do we do it? How strong and forceful do we need to be in the enforcement of boundaries that we have created? So I'd love to dive into a discussion of boundaries, but before we get into the nitty-gritty, I'm wondering if anyone has a good personal story about what creating boundaries looks like, an example from your own life.
Well, I will share one. This is Natasha for those just listening but can't see. For years, it's with a cousin, so this is family related, and we talked every day. And she has the type of like over the top personality, you know, me. I won't say narcissistic, but I guess in a way, yes. And a way that she would make herself feel even more elevated is she would just put me down, criticize me, just make, you know, really hurtful comments. And for years, I put up with it. I would just laugh it off. Yeah, you know, yeah, I guess I am, you know, whatever. But then I started practicing self-love. And I was like, no, that does not define me. And this relationship is not good for me. I'm going to have to love her from a distance. And like I said, we talked every day. So I just stopped calling her every day. When she would call me, I was not easily available. And she started realizing something had changed. Now, I never got to the point where I actually told her, this is why I'm distancing myself from you. But she got the message nonetheless. She sent a text initially, hey, cuz, what's going on? We used to talk every day. Is everything all right? I said, no, I'm good. You know, I just got a lot going on. I'm good. And I was able to distance myself. I slowly introduced myself back into our relationship, although I never told her, you used to hurt my feelings. We're good now. And because I set that boundary of loving her from a distance for a while, I was able to reintroduce myself back into the relationship and not take her comments. She hasn't changed, but I changed, and I don't take her comments personally anymore. And I know it's not about me. It's her trying to make herself feel better about herself because of what she feels might be shortcoming in her own personal life. So in dealing with her, I distance myself, reintroduce myself, and now we're good. Now, I wouldn't say it's recommended to not discuss things with people, but in my case, I didn't, but it still worked for me. Sometimes you're just going to have to tell that person, hey, you're making me feel this way and it's not okay, and go from there.
Yeah, I love your reference to self-love and that setting this boundary was a form of self-love for you. And I do think it's interesting that you brought up an example in which you did not have to explicitly say, this is my boundary. And I think for someone that is maybe anxious around the idea of setting boundaries, that can be a good first step to dipping your toe in it, at least to starting to set boundaries. But there are certainly times where it needs to be more forthright, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
I know, actually.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I would love to turn to Sarah to start us off on this next question. Sarah, how do we hold space for empathy while still creating boundaries with loved ones? Are boundaries black and white, or is there this middle ground gray area that we need to be ready to navigate in setting our boundaries?
Mm-hmm. I think we've referenced this a few times. Like, boundaries is in the air. It's a buzzword right now, right? And we are rightfully discussing it more and talking about it, you know, with your Her Circle members. It comes up a lot, right? But we are getting advice from social media. We're getting advice from friends. We're getting advice from friends' therapists, right? We're getting advice from friends saw on social media. Like, so we're getting all this advice, but I just want to call attention first to boundaries are not prescriptive. What works for somebody and their story may not work for you because you're the expert in your particular relationship and what you need out of it. So that's the first thing I want to say, because I see a lot of black and white thinkers who think that, oh, if I set a boundary with this person, like, that's it. I think sometimes we confuse boundaries with like stonewalling. I'm going to cut you out. I'm going to, you know, but really boundaries are more intentional and are in our control. So with stonewalling, that kind of feels out of our control, right? Of just like avoid it and, you know, but if I were in that situation with them, I wouldn't have control again. So one thing that I talk about a lot when talking through personalized boundaries with people is creating space for the both and. And you all hear this therapist speak a lot, but I think it really applies to boundary making because oftentimes we're creating boundaries with people we love, people we care about, people we cherish. And if we are just looking at the, they can't do this to me, without creating space for like, I wonder why they're like that. What happened to them to create that in them? I think once we open the door for the empathy at the same time as holding our boundary, it becomes a little bit more like creating boundaries with our kids. We all create boundaries with our kids, but it's done with love. So if we can do that with a cousin, if we can do that with our mom, the same place, holding love and holding the boundary at the same time, I think that creates more successful and healthy boundaries. One thing I just wanted to add when looking at patterns and stuff, it might be helpful to create a genogram. And therapists do this. This is an exercise you can research and do on your own also. It's looking through your family tree and looking at patterns from one generation, one person to another. And, you know, if you have this broken line, right, connecting you and your mom, but you look what your mom went through, right? Like, where were her connected secure lines? Maybe she didn't have any. So it makes sense that her line is broken, right? And holding space for that while still holding your boundary really is, I think, important.
After you set the boundary, I don't know if anybody else relates to this, but I find that for me and for people that I work with, especially moms, there is like this, we're such givers, we're women. It's like, we give, right? We give, we just give. And I think there is like a lot of guilt and self-judgment after setting a boundary. Like, okay, what if you're strong enough to set a boundary, but then you feel, you know, guilty about the boundary, and then you go back. I just had this happen with a client. One of my clients is a friend, and that's such a hard thing to do. And I knew it was when I did it, but anyway, she's a struggling mom. And I set a boundary with her about, you know, she has a 10-month-old baby, and I set a boundary that I would only be helping her and not the 10-month-old baby, that she needs to get a doctor for the baby. And then I was feeling guilty after. I'm concerned, she's my friend. And I set a boundary with her that we were going to take a little break from coaching, and I wasn't going to message her, and I was going to see her, let's say, in a month. And then I messaged her because I'm worried. She's my friend, not just my client. So I'm very worried about her. So there's also that feeling of self-judgment I should have, or just being overly concerned. So I think that that comes up a lot with boundaries, and I have tools and I recognize it, but thought I should say, because I bet that's something that some people here can relate to.
Melanie, I was just saying, like, I think you speak the heart of so many women, at least women that I come in contact with, how common that is. And I'm on the flip side, like, boundaries is some of my favorite work to do with folks, because it's liberating work. It's like anti-oppressive and anti-patriarchal work, right? Like, it's really exciting because boundaries are values-based, right? They're rooted in who we are in the world and what we believe in. And oftentimes what you're talking about, Melanie, is this external conditioning. Culturally, we're taught love lives outside of us. Love lives in our service, like, especially as women, love lives in all of these things. And so we're taught that my safety and my belonging, these core human elements, are outside of me. And so my boundaries no longer belong to me. They belong to someone else's acceptance of my love or my belonging. And so as we age, we pull that in and say, okay, wait, that's not working for me anymore. And so I loved that, I think it was you, Natasha, brought in, like, boundaries as a form of self-love, because self-love is often the thing we aren't taught, is how to love ourselves well and how to have a solid sense of self-worth and self-esteem. And so for me, boundaries are an act of consideration, which I think is the highest form of love. How well I consider myself and how well I consider you. And the work in the boundary is holding the gap. How do I hold the gap between how I consider me and how I consider you? And that is emotional regulation, which is why we need therapists like Sarah, and nervous system regulation, right? It's somatic work. And how I hold the gap between friend, I can't do everything, I only have this so much capacity, and also, like, I love you. And so the emotional regulation and the grounding and the receiving and the giving that allows my body to stay. And what's tied in there for me is my personality and my value system. And if I don't know those things well, if I don't have a good level of self-awareness, my boundaries get leached by all these external things. So I love this work because this is where you see women, like, just step into their power, and it's super cool. So I can flip the script on boundaries being a lovely thing.
Ah, I love it. And Erin, you brought up some interesting things that I'd love to dive into a little bit, because setting boundaries can be more than just verbalizing strong words and drawing a line in the sand. It's also something that we need to manage with our own physical body. When we set a boundary, it's something we feel physically. So how do we hold that line within our nervous system and navigate it at a somatic level?
I love this question. And I'm sure y'all have your own things, right? Because, like, as Sarah said at the beginning, boundaries aren't prescriptive. Neither is somatics, like, neither is our nervous system. So this is why I love the Enneagram and the personality tool, because it helps me understand. I fixate as a type 7, which is a very high energetic type. Chrissy, you, I think as a 3, like, you can come up there too. And so when I hold a boundary, what floods my body is urgency, right? I don't get the, like, guilt or shame necessarily that some other types might get. I get urgency. I get the scarcity response. And so for me, bringing my nervous system to regulation isn't going to be slow, quiet things. It needs to be higher energy things. So immediately I can feel my hand, just thinking about it, I can feel my hands trembling, right? I'm not holding a boundary, but my body is like, oh, boundaries are scary. So I'm going to start shaking, right? Or I might dance. I might bounce my body, right? I'm going to do things that allow me to release the energy. Let's say I was feeling the guilt or the shame, maybe like Melanie had. I would probably put my feet on the ground, build my container, maybe close my eyes, start to sense where the guilt lived. For me, that's probably my heart, my chest, because my grief lives here, right? And sometimes guilt and shame are just a precursor to grief, a sadness that I can't do everything for everyone that I love, because that's what I'm conditioned and programmed to be. And I might just put a little pressure and a little holding there and just be with it. And then I'm going to add some emotional regulation, those beautiful affirmations, some mantra work of like, I'm good enough. What I do for my friend is enough, even if I can't help her here. And yeah, I'm sad that I can't help her because she's worthy of the help. I'm also worthy of the break. So we meet us where we are, depending on what our nervous system is telling us. And it's an art form. The last thing I'll say is try a bunch of stuff, borrow from other people, and quit it quickly if it doesn't work for you, because we don't force our nervous system. That's already part of the trauma cycle. So you might try my things and go, they don't work. Erin, that didn't work for me. Okay, keep trying.
So interesting. I love hearing about things that we store in the body and how to release it. And it's just a whole discussion that we could have on just that one topic. Thank you so much to each of our expert panelists for joining us today. Toxic relationships and handling conflicts are topics we hear in our community of moms, and they bring them up repeatedly. And we appreciate each of you taking the time to come together and discuss this issue and share your own unique thoughts and perspectives. Be sure to check out herhealthcollective.com for more great content from each of these expert panelists throughout the year. And go check out our Patreon station, where we have a wonderful example that Melanie did of emotional freedom tapping technique.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, everybody. We appreciate you being here. We've enjoyed hanging out with you today, friend. We hope you got to finally enjoy a hot cup of coffee as you listened. Make sure you follow us so you're the first to know when we drop a new episode.
If you've enjoyed your time with us, let us know by leaving a review. We always love hearing from you. Until next time, stay true to you.